Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we welcome in my broadcast partner for Penn State basketball and also world-renowned expert on horse racing, especially when he picks winners, Dick Girardi. Welcome, sir.
Where was that 2 weeks ago?
Still waiting.
Aren't we all?
Aren't we all? Yeah, I remember when I asked you a couple of weeks ago about the pack of horses where, okay, it would make sense if it was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Did I'll Have Another make that grouping?
Oh, yeah. He was, you know, you win the Santa Derby, you're certainly always a contender for the Kentucky Derby. So, yeah, if I'd have ranked him in order 1 to 20, I'd have probably had him like maybe 5th or 6th. So, yeah, no, he had a chance, for sure.
Before we get to him, let's talk about Union Rags. Can a horse possibly have a worse trip than that horse had over a mile and a quarter?
Unless he fell, no. I mean, really, it was just silly, Steve. I mean, it went bad from the start and never really got much better. The horse that we thought he'd be maybe 6th or 7th after a quarter mile, instead he was 18th. So that put him in a bad spot. And he's taking all this dirt, which is never a good thing when it's a massive field like that. And looked like he maybe was finally going to make a run as they hit him before a turn, and the horse in front of him just backed up right in front of him, so he lost all his momentum. Yeah, by then the race was over for him. He passed a bunch of horses in the stretch, but I don't know what that means or doesn't mean, frankly, because he just never really got a chance to stretch out his stride and get a real good sense of what he could have done. So, yeah, you'd put if you were handicapping him for his next race, which would be the Belmont Stakes, you just put a big line through the Kentucky Derby and go, that never happened.
Right. Because he stumbled, was squeezed, then inexplicably was sent to the rail, and then when he got to the rail, he got shoved against the rail.
Yeah. Other than that, it went swimmingly. Hanging rags. Yeah, it was a nightmare. It really was bad.
It was no surprise in the Derby to see Bodemeister get out to the lead. He's a speed horse. We know it. At a mile and 3/16, as opposed to the mile and a quarter, what do you think about this horse's chances tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a big chance. He's going to be the favorite, probably a significant favorite, I would think, because unlike the Derby, Steve, where there was other speed in the race, like Hansen and Trenneberg, there isn't a single hint of other early speed in this race. So he will be able to get to the front without any duress at all. So the fraction should be more rational than they were in Kentucky. Therefore, you would think you would have a little more left to finish with. He had nothing left in the last couple hundred yards of the Derby. And this race, for the people that don't follow it, imagine a football field in one end zone. That's how much shorter this race is than the Derby. It's 110 yards shorter. So you would think that would favor Bodemeister. He's definitely the horse to beat. There is no doubt.
I'll Have Another. Of course, what do you look in terms of this race, the way it's set up? What do you think about, obviously he's one of the favorites, he has to be,
sure.
And a lot of people are going to put a lot. I think he's, what, 5-2 right now?
Right, yeah, and Steve, I think that's about where he'll be. Maybe, yeah, I would say in that range, because he's still got to prove it to some people. He's 15-1 when he won the Derby, and the young rider, Mario Gutierrez, who certainly rode him great, people don't know him. Doug O'Neill, the trainer, just doesn't have the name like Bob Baffert does with Bodemeister, so all that combined, he's not going to be the favorite, but he'll certainly get play. The difference between I'll Have Another and Kentucky and here is that there, everything that could have gone right did go right. He broke from the 19, yet he was only outside two horses going into the first turn. Rider just gave him, there weren't any horses in front of him. none behind him, none next to him. It was almost like he was in a race of his own, which is really hard to do in a big field like that. And then when Bodie Mostert got tired, he was the one in position to finish, and he did. This race is going to be a little more tricky because it looks like he's the second speed in the race, meaning he's probably going to be the half the one to commit first to try and go after Bodie Mostert. That's a little harder to do. That's actually the hardest thing in horse racing is to chase a really good speed horse and then have enough to pass that horse and hold off any horses that are coming from behind. So that's sort of the situation they're going to find themselves in, I think. And I think they know that, so that tactics may be adjusted because of it.
Every time we watch the Preakness, they always bring up the tighter turns at Pimlico. Does that really come into play, and if so, how?
The turns are not tighter at Pimlico. It's one of those things, Steve, that's been repeated right. So often, right? It's become fact. Yeah, it's just silly. The difference is,
And you noticed how I phrased the question.
What it is, it's interesting. The track is narrower, right, on the straightaways and on the turns, if that makes sense, right? There's just less space. Like Churchill Downs, there's a lot more space from inside rail to outside.
Yeah, there's not the width.
Correct. Yeah, so yeah, that's what we're talking about. So the turns are, both tracks are a mile. The turn, you could put the tracks, the ovals, on top of each other, and they would fit perfectly. So there is no, it's not, that's just not the case. Now, the stretch is a little shorter at Pimlico. That is true. So it might be a little harder to make up ground. You don't have enough time to do it. But now the turns really aren't a factor. Look, there was a time, and you know I grew up down here, there was a time in the 70s where being on the inside near the rail, it was unreal. It was like a concrete highway. But that hasn't been the case down here for 15 or 20 years. But I think that has died hard. But, yeah, the surface has changed over time, and it's just not that way anymore. So now it's just a racetrack. I thought King Gutierrez had the greatest line. He said, well, what about Pimlico? You've never ridden. He says, it's an oval, and it's dirt. I'm okay.
And that's something I've talked about for a long time. There's so much mythology in sports. That's why I asked the question the way I asked it, right. Because of the mythology. Because you and I have talked about it enough. I know it's not tighter.
Right. Yeah, it's like the old Gene Hackman and Hoosiers, right? He goes, measures the baskets at Ankle Fieldhouse. Hey, 10 feet high. Same as your gym. So, yeah, that's true here. Now, look, when they go to Belmont Park, that is different, Steve, because it's a mile and a half over. Right? So the turns are wider, and they're much more sweeping turns. So that is different. These turns are tighter than Belmont Park. That's true. But is Churchill and Pimlico not true?
There are 11 horses in the field. In terms of traffic, how does that play out? Whose advantage is it because there will be less traffic?
Yeah, it's obviously irrelevant to Bodie Mostert, right, because he's going to be in front, so there is no traffic. They're all chasing him. Probably shouldn't be much of a factor for I'll Have Another, because you would think he'd be – Nope. I think at the worst coming out of the first turn, be like fourth. So, yeah, we lose 9 horses, right? We go from 20 to 11. So, just imagine you're driving out on 322. A lot easier to drive when there's nobody in the left lane, right? If you're in the right lane, it's just you're cruising. Well, we're down almost 50%. So, yeah, there'll be a lot less traffic. And there'll also be a lot less horses that don't belong in the race. Right, to get in the way, which is what happened, unfortunately, Union Ranks, that was the horse of Europe. He never should have been entering the race anyway. He got his way nearer the end of it. So, yeah, I don't see it. But, look, it could be chaos. Somebody could stumble, and weird things can happen that you can't anticipate. But on paper, shouldn't be a big issue.
Is there a horse in this field that did not run in the Kentucky Derby that, with fresh legs, can make a run?
I don't think so, because there's just nothing that's done anything, right? None of these horses have won any significant races. And the ones that come out of the Derby, the first, second, fourth, and fifth finishers, all of them are running, they've all won significant races at one time or another. So they're proven. The new ones really aren't. They weren't good enough to qualify for the Derby 2 weeks later. I don't see it. Probably of the new horses, the one that would interest me most would be Teeth of the Dog. Believe it or not, named after a golf course in the Dominican, I'm told. he's trained by Michael Matz, who has obviously had Union Rags and he's going to see what he can do. I don't know that Michael, he actually wanted to run him last Saturday, Steve, up at the Peter Pan Stakes at Belmont, but the owner said, hey, I think we can win here. So that's why he's in. He would be the one that looks like maybe he's heading in the right direction. He could get somewhere. But one other one to throw in is the one Tiger Walk, just for a neat story. He's owned by Kevin Plank, you know, owns Under Armour, big Maryland guy, and he actually brought back to life the legendary Sagamore Farm, which is out north of Baltimore, which is where Native Dancer was born and lived. And he was the horse. He'd be the horse on they have all the statues of Native Dancer. He won every race in his career except for one. Unfortunately for him, one was the Kentucky Derby. Where he lost at the end. But, yeah, he never lost another race. And just imagine if you win the Triple Crown and you're undefeated for your career. Not that we don't ever hear about Secretary, because we do, but that's how close he was to being the immortal horse.
Right, exactly. And that's one of the remarkable stories, is that Native Dancer, with the incredible career, that's the one the Gray Ghost never won.
Yeah, he was like the first television star, right? Because TV was just coming around, and it was cool because it was all black and white, obviously, back then. But you could pick him out because, as Steve just said, he was a gray horse, so he was easy to follow, and he used to come from behind. But yeah, he was obviously a legendary horse, and in Maryland, still very much revered. And the guy who owned him, Alfred Vanderbilt, is the guy who staged the legendary match race here between War Admiral and Cephas. So, there you go, a little Maryland horse history, Steve. You never know what you're getting.
From you? No, of course not.
No, you don't. I could do that in the middle of a play that you could be calling. I could start talking about history of horses in Maryland. I've been known to do that, too. And he shoots at that Native Dancer, Steve.
Dark Star beat him?
Dark Star?
How did I do?
Appropriately named Dark Star.
How did I do?
He did great, man. I'm impressed. Okay. You know these things. Yeah, Eric Darren never got over getting beat with Native Dancer.
Mm. Tell us a little bit about people who love horse racing or are casual fans of horse racing. Obviously know Bob Baffert. Baffert's one of the star trainers. Everybody knows that. Tell us a little bit about Doug O'Neill.
Yeah, Doug O'Neill is one of the nicest people in the game. He's just a regular guy that's very approachable, quotable, pretty quick-witted. The times I've dealt with him, I've always found him, unlike some sports, horse racing is everybody's pretty much accessible, but he's even beyond that. Obviously, his issue is now that he won the Derby, and he's won a lot of big races before, just not the Derby, that's the race. He's now under scrutiny that he was never under before. So his record, some of which include violations for illegal drugs over time, is now being scrutinized. And that's the way it is. You got to just deal with it. And he's a high-volume guy who runs a lot of horses. And I think as he was younger, did some things he probably wishes he could take back, but he can't. So, yeah, everybody's focused on that, too. But, yeah, all in all, he's obviously good. He knows what he's doing. He's won significant races, but yeah, he's the it happens to everybody that wins the Derby. If people don't know who they are, they will get scrutinized. So his record has been that. And that's fair game. That's the way it's supposed to be.
You grew up around Pimlico. How much has the track, the facility itself, changed over the years? Because I know a long time ago people were concerned about it.
Yeah, it really hasn't, Steve. They don't put any money into this place at all, because the money-making days, they'll do okay today. It's not like the Kentucky Oaks Day in Louisville, but their moneymaker is all one day, so they don't have a great incentive to spend a lot of money fixing up the plant. It's all about the infield. So, yeah, it looks very much like it did in the mid-70s when I first started coming out here on a regular basis. The difference is that the grandstand used to be really crowded during the week. Now it's not, because everybody's watching on TV down in the different rooms they have, where people are home betting on the Internet, which is the one sport where you can bet on the Internet legally. So, yeah, it looks the same, but yeah, a lot fewer people come to the facility. It's interesting. About 90% of all the money in horse racing is now bet somewhere other than a racetrack. And you could never have imagined that back in the day when people used to just grab. But it's a lot more convenient. You can do it other places.
2 weeks between races. Does that make this a far more unpredictable trip in some ways because of the two-week turnaround? And when you've talked to the trainers, whether it's Baffert or O'Neill, have they felt their horses came out of Louisville pretty good?
Yeah, I haven't heard anybody complaining. Now, it's the only time in these horses' careers they'll ever run with just a two-week rest, because they don't do it at the top levels of the sport. They usually take 5, 6, 7 weeks between races. But having said that, it's interesting. Even in this year when trainers are doing that, you see the form, the Derby form, really hold in the Preakness. So it's not like they're overwhelmed. The horses that run well in the Derby almost always run well in the Preakness. So the 2 weeks, at least at this stage of the season, does not hurt these horses. And I think a lot of it is just the trainers. That's how they do it now. And they would never run a horse 2 weeks except when they have to. And in this case, the ones that want to run in the Preakness, they run out of the Derby. They got no choice. They got to be run back in 2 weeks.
All right. So if you're sitting there, and you're going to look at it, how are you going to box it tomorrow?
Yeah, but again, Bodie Muster's the most likely winner, but his price is going to be unappealing, like 6-5 or 7-5. The horse that I think has a chance at a reasonable price is Went the Day Well. He'll be number 5. He was 4th in the Derby. He was back there with Union Rags early. He got loose on the turn and made up a ton of ground. He ended up getting beat a couple of lengths at the wire. They'd gone another 5th, probably another 20 yards, he'd have been 2nd. Another 100, he might have won it. He was rolling. I would think he'd be a lot closer this time. The problem is he's going to have to catch a loose-in-the-lead Bodie Meister again. He's going to go in slower price. It's not an easy thing to do. But, yeah, that's who I picked. Went the Day Well. So I'm kind of Went the Day Well, Bodie Meister 2nd. I'll have another 3rd. Not real sexy, Steve, but I just don't see anything unusual happening here. Yeah. I just don't see a lot of long shot possibilities.
Yeah, you're talking about a 6-1, an 8-5, and a 5-2.
Exactly. I'm not telling anybody anything they don't know here. I'd like to have all these insights. I had a lot of insights in the Derby that just didn't turn out to be true.
Well, traffic.
But they were great insights, nevertheless.
they were great insights.
They were just wrong.
See, on radio for basketball, I think you're always right.
There you go. Yeah, well, yeah, who could argue?
Thank you, my friend.
You got it, Steve. Always a pleasure chatting horses with you, my
friend. Dick Girardi. Kevin is quickly filling out.
Oh, I'm scrambling right
speak.
Now, yeah.
As he does that, we need to take a break.
I know.
One of us has to be aware that this is a commercial enterprise.
Well don't forget, you got to give the Black-Eyed Susan recipe out there, too.
9 out of 10 times, I'm the one that remembers this is a commercial enterprise. We will come back. Kevin will fill out his form while planting Black-Eyed Susans after this.
Sunbury Motor Company, a tradition of trust since 1915. We have the largest selection of new and used Fords, Lincolns, Hyundais, and Kias anywhere. You want a new Ford? You got it. A 2012 Ford Fiesta four-door sedan, just $232 per month. And it gets 38 miles per gallon. And if you really want to save mileage money, come get a new 2012 Hyundai Veloster, three-door coupe with 40 miles per gallon on the highway for just $292 a month. Swing on over to Sunbury Motors Kia and try on a new 2012 Kia Forte four-door sedan for just $18,230. And when it comes to used cars, well, just head over to sunburymotors.com and search our huge selection of pre-owned vehicles, where you can use our black book and take the guesswork out of trading in your old car. We give you easy access to the most up-to-date internet car buying tools. There's a reason we're number one. So come check us out today at Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, located at 943 North 4th Street in the Auto Plaza, or Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, or go to sunburymotors.com.
All right, you were saying before the break.
Yes.
Oh, no, it's not another one of those where we have to pick up your thought.
No, I was just, giving the Black-Eyed Susan recipe. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, yes.
All right. Need a little vodka, need a little whiskey, throw in some sweet and sour mix, a nice little flavor of orange juice. Some people like a nice little garnish with an orange slice, a cherry, stir stick. And you're good to go for the Preakness.
The Phillies miss Vance Worley. And that's why when it was brought up today about Roy Oswalt, I said maybe the Phillies should seriously consider him because you have to be concerned that he's out at this stage. Kyle Kendrick, to their credit, gave him a pretty good start the other night.
Did. The problem is consistency with Kendrick. And we're seeing consistency problems, too, with also Dakeman. Dakeman is another one that they thought looked really, really good. Actually, we all thought he looked really, really good the other day against extra inning game. Had everything under control. Everything was down. And then last night, it just looked like nothing was in the right spot.
Mm-hmm.
Walking guys, pitches were hanging, and a nice little 5-6 run lead turned into a save opportunity.
Charlie Manuel's not going to manage tonight for the Phillies. He's been suspended for one game for the nose-to-nose argument with umpire Bob Davidson. They both were suspended.
Yeah, you know what? Davidson instigated that one.
Mm-hmm.
Because he yells into the dugout. Now, I'm sure Charlie said something about getting in Schneider's way, and that's when he came out and instigated that one.
Davidson's been warned by Major League Baseball before, and this put them over the top. He is not going to umpire tonight's game between the Twins and the Brewers at Target Field. They're going to call up a minor league umpire to take his place. Meanwhile, Manuel is not going to manage tonight against the Red Sox. The A's could be on the move, and we will explain why. I talked to Kevin about this morning. I gave him a 15-minute explanation. I found it frustrating. Never frustrating, the incomparable Sarah Bartlett. She steps in with the news at the bottom of the hour here on WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
There we go. Welcome. Great to have you with us. Open line time the rest of the way through. Kevin Herr on hand. A final half hour. We'll call it the Ask Kevin half hour. This is where you ask Kevin a question, and then I will correct the answers.
I'm glad somebody does.
Why? Just trying to help out.
Hey, I always said I have the information. It's just not necessarily the right information.
Oh, brutal. All right. Let's get to the possibility the Oakland A's are moving. Possibility. The A's have always been second banana everywhere they've gone. When they were in Philadelphia, they may have won, especially early on, more than the Phillies did, especially winning World Series. Phillies didn't win until 1980. They still were the second team in the city. And then when the later years after World War II with Connie Mack in the later years, the A's were unquestionably the second team. They then moved to Kansas City, I think I want to say 1955. They stayed in Kansas City from 55 to 67 as the Kansas City A's played at Old Municipal Stadium. And then moved to Oakland. And in Oakland, they have been the second banana to the Giants, even though they've been more successful than the Giants. I mean, they have been far more successful than the Giants. The Giants have won one World Series. 2010, 2010. The A's won three in a row, for goodness sakes. In 72, 73, 74, came back again. Won in 89. But they're the second banana, attendance-wise. The Giants own the Bay Area. The A's may have had the Reggie Jacksons, the Joe Rudys, the Catfish Hunters, Sal Bando, Blue Moon Odom, Raleigh Fingers. The Giants were more popular. Now, the Oakland Coliseum is not a great place to play baseball in. So they're looking at another spot, and they don't want to go that far. At one point, a few years ago, they looked at Sacramento, decided not to move to Sacramento. And now you see with the Kings, they're having trouble with the cobbling together financing for a new arena for the Kings. And they want to go to San Jose. What fans may not realize is that each team has territorial rights. Most of the time, it's easy. Territorial rights in Boston, for example, they're the only show, have been the only show since the Braves left for Milwaukee. Okay. Well, the Giants, who had played at Candlestick Park for years, had actually considered moving to San Jose at one point themselves, before then AT&T Park was built. So they have claimed San Jose as their territory. In order for the A's to move to San Jose, they would have to give the Giants money. So there you go. And that's where the A's are right now. They're in a lousy ballpark. Have been for a long time. The Coliseum, I mean, there's just, it's so cavernous. There's so much foul territory there. It's unbelievable how bad it is. And on top of that, the lease isn't great, and they're the number two team. Now, where else do you go? I don't know. I don't know where else they can go. But I know they've taken a long look at San Jose. But they can't go there because of territorial rights. So Bud Selig, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, well aware of the situation. And they've been very reluctant to approve relocations for a long time. Now, the Giants are preventing the A's from building a ballpark in San Jose. Now, the last team to move, of course, the Expos, they went to Washington, became the Nationals in 2004. And before that, the Senators left and became the Rangers. So that would be it. 23 teams have opened ballparks since 1989. Right now, the A's in Tampa Bay are the only two seeking new stadiums. Lewis Wolf is the owner of the Oakland A's. He wants to look at downtown Oakland. But in order to move outside of Oakland, he needs to get the approval of Major League Baseball. Now, Wolf is a California guy, real estate developer, so it's not like he's going to take the team and move them to Boise. He wants to go to San Jose. And he wants to keep, in other words, he wants to keep in the Bay Area. They're close enough. The Giants have a new park. I don't understand why they're so resistant to San Jose unless they feel that that's where they draw from. There will be more interleague play next year because the Astros are going to the American League. That means Houston and Texas will both be in the same league. There'll be more interleague play. They're also looking at retaining six interleague games between rivals, Mets, Yankees, Cubs, White Sox, A's, Giants, Dodgers, Angels. Says the fans like it. But that's where it stands. He wants to go to San Jose, and believe me, it's a better place to be than Oakland. But they have to figure out a way to convince the Giants to do it. The Giants claim it. The Giants aren't going anywhere. They have a gorgeous ballpark. But they must feel that they draw well from the San Jose area and that the A's would strain it.
Geographically, San Francisco, or actually Oakland's closer.
Yeah.
Not by much, but.
Yeah, by a couple miles. But people don't realize their territorial rights in almost anything. For example, when the AFL merged with the NFL, the Jets, the Raiders, all had to pay territorial rights fees to the 49ers and the Giants, respectively. 49ers and Giants got money out of that deal. They got cash. But he does not want to take the A's, and he doesn't want to move them to Hummel's Wharf. He wants to keep them in Northern California, the Bay Area. He just would like to go to San Jose, home, by the way, of the Sharks.
I guess the question I would have to ask you, Steve, and we kind of talked about this earlier in the day when we first brought this topic up amongst ourselves, San Francisco, Oakland, they're parallel to each other. They're about the same distance apart from San Jose. How can San Francisco say that they have more fans in San Jose than Oakland does?
They must either have through season tickets or some sort of market research or television ratings that tells them that.
I mean, what does that leave Oakland with? Modesto?
Great spot. Love Modesto. Don't put it down. No.
Really?
No, never been there.
All right. Bakersfield might be open.
I think it's absurd. I think it's absurd. I really do.
I mean, you're talking about two teams that are right across from each other, and one saying that it owns a city, you know, 20 miles south that's about the same distance away. That would be like the Yankees and the Mets saying that Atlantic City is only for the Mets.
But that's what they've done here. And this is where Major League Baseball needs to step in and look at them and say, look, they're going to be right here. You're going to play each other six times a year anyway. The whole thing is absurd. At least I find. I've always found the territorial thing to be absurd. Always. But they are holding firm on it. This guy wants to move his team to a new ballpark in San Jose that he would build. He wants to keep the franchise in the area. Isn't that what everybody wants to begin with? I think if the Phillies, say the Phillies, they have brand new parks, so this is irrelevant. All right, but say the Phillies wanted to move to media. Okay? What's the difference? Now, for the city, it's a difference tax-wise, and for the bars and things like that. But for the fans, there's no difference. No difference at all. Now, if you wanted, now, this is the oddity. If they wanted to take the franchise, for example, and move it across to Camden, now it's out of Pennsylvania, yeah, that is a difference. Difference for everybody. I mean, you look what the Giants and Jets have done. I mean, they moved over to New Jersey. In return, New York City got the Nets.
There's a win.
I mean, you're Governor Christie's. Hey, good luck to you. He didn't even, I don't care if you go. He wished the Nets good riddance. All right, well done. So that's the story on that. And I think that is the territorial rights thing, after a while, gets to be a little ridiculous. To me, territorial rights come into play if, for example, I am the Milwaukee Brewers. I want to move back to Boston, and I'm going to, you know, and reincarnate the Boston Braves. Now, to me, that's when territorial rights come into play. Oakland, the A's are already there. They're already there. So since they're already there, to me, the whole part of Northern California is there. I mean, it's not as if they're looking at the Giants and saying, you know what? We love the McCovey Cove thing. How about if we build the park on the other side of the cove and we can both hit into it? Now, to me, that's territorial rights. San Jose is not territorial rights. It's just another city. Another place. I mean, it's not as if as if the A's, that they're still in Kansas City and they're going to move to the Bay Area. Now the Giants have an argument. Now some other team is moving into their territory. They've been there since 1968. They have been there for 44 years.
Was there this kind of discussion and debate when the Nationals came to Washington?
Yes, with the Orioles. The Orioles were vehement about the Baltimore-Washington corridor being their corridor.
Because that would be the same like distance we're talking about.
Exactly, but the difference is the Nationals were in Montreal. There was no team in Washington. Here you already have a team that is established. Thus, it is a different argument. The A's have been a part of the Bay Area fabric for 44 years. They're in their 45th season in Oakland right now. That, to me, establishes that they're already a part of the fabric. When the Nationals were formed from Montreal, when they made the move from the Expos, yes, for Peter Angelos, he had an argument. Baltimore, Washington, quarter. The Orioles drew very well from the D.C. area. They drew very well. He had an argument. A team was now, in quote, moving into and invading his territory. So he does have an argument in the discussion. When somebody's been there for 45 years, you have no argument in the discussion. You already share the market.
This would be like Washington and Baltimore 50 years down the road saying, I'm going to move to Frederick.
Well, essentially, yes. I'll agree with that. Yes, I completely agree with that. That's essentially the same thing. Or, for example, one of them wants to move to Annapolis. How about that?
Yeah. Somewhere nearby was the point, yeah.
That's what this is. They're already there. And they're not Johnny-come-lately. I mean, the Giants have already been in the Bay Area for 10 years longer. They got there in 58. The A's showed up in 68. I find the entire argument, it's another reason, you know, Major League Baseball wonders why they struggle gaining traction sometimes. Why other leagues are run better. This is one of them. This is one of them. Which league has the worst free agents system? I mean, in terms of stability of franchises.
Which one
is the only one that doesn't have a salary cap and has a tremendous competitive inequity?
There's no competition.
Exactly.
Trying to find a baseball player that starts and ends his career in the same place is just unheard of.
I mean, the NHL is the NHL, but they're better run. They have a better collective bargaining agreement. They're better run. Are they as popular? No, but are they better run? Yes. There are moments where the Pioneer Basketball League here locally is better run. All right, 1-800-795-9565. 1-800-795-9565. Final segment of the week. Stop the cheering out there in Sealands Grove for the Steve Jones Show and WKOK.
And out of the neck on the Cape Bridge on another gorgeous sunny Saturday. I'm seeing that bumper to bumper traffic.
City by the Bay. Yep. A's want to go to San Jose. Giants said, no, you can't go to San Jose. I'd look at them and go, excuse me. You know, if Steve Shannon Tires wants to move over from Sunbury and put the, and move over to Sealands Grove, he can. I mean, oh, goodness. All right. Amazing. Amazing, amazing. The Big 12 and SEC developing their own bowl game. It's either going to be the Sugar Bowl or the Cotton Bowl. That's my understanding now. It's either the Sugar Bowl or the Cotton Bowl that will end up with the game. How about that? And it'll be January 1st, 2014. A lot of people are criticizing the Big Ten for sticking hard to the Rose Bowl. Well, we're in Big Ten country here. And I can tell you right now, I agree with sticking with the Rose Bowl. Look, there are certain places where you, to me, if you are a sports fan, you want to go. It's part of your list that just has an aura to it that is different than any other place. Augusta National, St. Andrews, in tennis, Center Court Wimbledon, Fenway Park, Wrigley Field, Lambeau Field, the Rose Bowl, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Places that have great tradition. Now, you notice I didn't say Yankee Stadium. Yankee Stadium's been torn down. It's a brand new place, a different stadium now. Even the I would have included it in the renovated form, the previous one to this, because that was the same turf. Notre Dame Stadium, Beaver Stadium, Big House at Michigan, okay, Horseshoe in Columbus. I mean, places that you want to go to that are part of the fabric. Madison Square Garden in New York, Cameron Indoor Stadium, Pauley Pavilion, the Rose Bowl. Those are the places that bring with them the tradition and the deep roots that I think fans love and enjoy. And the Big Ten doesn't want to lose that. Even though they didn't win, I can tell you one of the greatest thrills of my broadcast career was to have broadcast a game in the Rose Bowl. Can't begin to tell you what that meant to me. To be in the Rose Bowl with the San Gabriels there in front of me. One of the great, they didn't win, but it was one of the great thrills of my career. And then 3 months later, I'm doing the NIT championship game in Madison Square Garden. Those places have meaning in the sports vocabulary. They have meaning in the sports vernacular. And to borrow the political term, those are places that have gravitas. I think it's a list a lot of people would love. They'd love to say they've been to Pauley Pavilion. They'd love to have said that they've been on the track at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. That they've been at Augusta National, St. Andrews, Center Court Wimbledon, Madison Square Garden, the Rose Bowl, Lambeau Field. Scott Trade Center in St. Louis. No, didn't make the cut. Or Kevin Herr Memorial Field. Like the sound of it.
Oh, I don't like the word memorial. Not a good choice.
That's our poll question next week, whether they like it or not.
I vote no.
So would I. Have a great weekend. Sarah's next big news block coming up on WKOK.
Your station for news, weather, business, and Fox Sports Radio is News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.